Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to a brand new episode here at Gamertag Radio. This is your host, Danny Pena, and for this episode of GTR Retro, we're going to take it back to 2014, and this is when we first heard that Microsoft Studios acquires the rights to the Gears of War franchise. And at that time, it was owned by Epic Games. So when that news came out, back in January 27th of 2014, former members of GTR at that time, Mandy, aka Lady Luck, and also Possum J, Patrick, they got together and recorded an episode about this news. Now, this episode was only released for GTR app users. So if you never downloaded an app that we had at that time, you probably completely missed this episode. This was only for app users, GTR app users. So it was a great conversation. This is like about 40-something minutes or so conversation between the two. And I'm going to play it here on Gamertag Radio. So I know it's been a couple months that we haven't played any of the GTR retro episodes, but I'm going to continue doing that because I know a lot of people really enjoy going back to those days, the early days of like the 360 era, original Xbox, PlayStation 2 and 3, all around that time. GameCube, Wii U, right? So I know people want to hear those episodes again. So I'm going to dig into the archives and look for other episodes where I think it is important for us to like re-release it again on GTR, part of the GTR retro special. So enjoy this audio. Let me know your thoughts. If there's any game or anything at that time that probably we covered it, or maybe a conversation or an interview or something like that, please let me know, and I'm gonna try my best to see if I can find it, you know, because it's kind of hard to find all these old episodes. So, but yeah, enjoy this GTR retro episode that took place back in 2014, 11 years ago, actually. So enjoy, and we'll be back here on Gamertag Radio next week. Enjoy. Bye.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Hey guys, and welcome to the not often seen, but we still do it, GTR Overtime.
It exists occasionally. Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Patrick.
Occasionally. As you can tell, this is Lady Luck and Possum J. And we decided that one of our topics that somehow didn't make it into this week's show of Gamertag Radio, because we had a lot of things to talk about, is worth discussing now.
Yes, probably because we care a lot more than maybe our contemporaries on the show.
Yeah, so this is one of those topics. So one of the things that happened earlier this week was everybody was talking like, oh my God, you know, Microsoft's going to have a big announcement this morning. I think it was Monday. Not quite sure. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm like thinking it's hours away, and apparently it was happening right at that time when I saw that, oh my God, there's going to be an announcement. Only for somebody to, you know, make a comment like, I don't know what it's going to be, but it better be good. And then somebody responded and said, oh, apparently they bought the license to Gears of War. So Microsoft owns the Gears of War license. Epic Games no longer does. And that was their big announcement for the week.
Which is strange, because it honestly made me question what Epic is even doing anymore, because, you know, they were making...
What is Epic doing?
I mean, they're probably still making that Fortnite game that they showed off, I think, at the VGAs like 2 years ago, where it's like cel-shaded zombie defense third-person game. Pretty safe bet, essentially. I'll link it to you later. I'll put a link in after this chat, but it's a pretty interesting idea. But, I mean, obviously we haven't seen anything from them since, you know, Gears of War 3, honestly. No Unreal Tournament, no mention of that. They've been making Unreal Engine 4, and I guess making that probably their main focus right now, because they seem to be less and less interested with making games at this point. Because, you know, Cliff Bleszinski left, Rod Ferguson left, who was one of the main guys doing the Gears thing. So for me, it's kind of like Gears 3 was a Halo 3 situation where it's just like, all right, that was a trilogy that was amazing. I'd like to
You should have stopped there.
I should have stopped there. But of course, you know, with Halo, you know, then you had ODST. So I'm like, all right, this is really good. And you had Reach. I'm like, okay, this is pretty awesome. But then 4 happened. And then it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm not really into Halo anymore because, you know, I'm not with it anymore. I don't know if I outgrew Halo. Halo went off in some direction. I don't know what they were trying to do there. But for Gears, like it was the same thing. But I don't know. Gears is weird for me because Gears 1 is probably my all-time favorite 360 game, at least online, because the multiplayer was so different and
new and fresh.
So innovative and fresh, and the graphics like were mind-melting, and it was great. And the co-op, and I mean, you used to play it back in the day. A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. For those of you that don't know, and I think it's somewhere back in the archives, poor Poston got stuck doing co-op through Gears 1 as well as Gears 2 with me, like with the campaign. And I'm pretty sure I complained about everything the entire way through.
No, you did. But, I mean, I got to admit, you made it more exciting because I had to be so much more open to the things that you could get into. I was like, I didn't even know could do that. I didn't know you could go over there. So you kept it interesting. And that's why I like co-op games is your partner always adds new dynamics to it. But, I mean, as Gears went forward, got a bigger budget, became a bigger deal, sold more copies, they added more stuff to it. I feel like they were starting to creep away from what made the game fun, overbalancing weapons, you know that whole thing.
Gears 3 was the most cliche ending ever.
Yes. Gears 3 is the worst, too, especially if you're like me and you read all of the Gears of War novels, which, I gotta admit, Karen Travis can write a damn good book. Because, you know, I love my Halo novels, but those Gears of War novels had something special about them because they were almost written like, you know, World War II novels almost. They had that war aspect to them. They were very engaging. So to have an ending of Gears 3, which basically just spits in the face of all of that and kind of just, you know, goes for the lowest common denominator of just, you know, oh, we're going to kill off this guy and we're going to kill off this bad person and, oh, here's a little plot twist. Now the game's over. And it's just like all that hard work that they built up for over the years since 2006. It's like the Mass Effect situation where just kind of like they just spit on it at the end. And they're like, all right, that's done. Let's move on. We made our money.
Hey, I liked Mass Effect 3.
Mass Effect 3 was an amazing game. I guess I'm still eternally going to hate on the ending because I'm not one of the cool kids who waited long enough to play the extended edition with the real endings and stuff like that. So
I didn't care.
For me, it's still a sore spot for me. So like I still use that as an analogy, and I know that I'm probably in the wrong. I could go back and replay it and have a great time, I'm sure, but just...
No, well, like, I guess maybe...
That was my thing.
We won't get into that. You know,
that's a whole different thing right there. But for Gears, I feel like 3, you know, as stupid as a note as it ended on, I accepted
it. Closed up the trilogy.
They did as much things as they could possibly do to the multiplayer. You could play as the bad guys now in anti-horde mode. You could do horde mode, had, you know, fence building and turrets and stuff, like giant robots. They went all out for Gears 3. And it was a really fun experience, definitely. But, you know, as Judgment proved, the one that came out that no one cared about, I don't think there's anything else they can do with this. So now the fact that they've announced a new Gears of War, I don't know if they'll call it Gears of War 4 or they'll try to reboot it into something else, but I think they've really limited themselves into a narrow field of, as you said earlier, how much can they really change? Because the name Gears of War implies a certain thing.
Yeah, and
I'm confused. Like, you pick this up and be like, are we fighting locusts now? Are we going to fight the humans maybe in the Coalition Wars?
You know.
Is it a side story? Are they on another planet? Do they space travel? There's so many what ifs that's like, I feel like they're going into this with already notches against them, because in my mind, I'm already thinking of the worst case scenarios of just like, I want to be interested in this, but I can't think of what they would do that would make me not be like, oh, come on, really?
Well, and here's, this is more of a kind of blanket thing, because I feel like the transition now into a new generation means that we should really put a lot of focus on new IPs, especially because it's such a, you know, such a drastic jump in the console hardware.
Yeah.
Much more than it was from, say, the Xbox 360. And so this is kind of a generic blanket statement, but especially applies in this context. As you said, you know, the fact is that if you are going to title something with the name Gears of War, there is a certain expectation for how the game plays, for the mechanics of the game, for the experience you're expecting to get out of it. And while you can make some changes to that with stories and characters and enemies, you know, a lot of at least the base core elements of the game cannot change, at least not a lot. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to see a drastically different combat system. You know, you're not going to see a drastically different cover system. You're not going to see a drastically different, you know, just game mechanics. And because of that, you know, it's one of those where I look at it and say, am I going to get a new experience out of it? Which is really what we're looking mm-hmm. for now that we're into this vastly different new game generation. Yeah. And I feel like the answer right now is no, because, you know, as somebody responded, I believe it was Danny earlier when I brought this up, he's like, well, yeah, they can make it different, but I, you know, we don't know what they're doing, but it's still going to be Gears of War. And so that phrase right there, it's still going to be whatever it may be. So it's still going to be Gears. It's still going to be Halo. You know, that tells you right there that you are having certain expectations that aren't likely to be broken, because it's a fine line between making a new game and stepping on the toes of the fans of the franchise that are going to be your first buyers.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And so, like, you know, when I heard that, I was kind of like, great. You know, another game that they're going to put all this attention on that I'm really not interested in, you know.
No, I fully understand what you're saying. I don't know. For me, it's just, other than better graphics, which is obviously the only thing I could think that's going to really set this apart, better lighting, I'm just worried that, I know we're early in this life cycle of the new generation, and, you know, literally 2014 just started, but, like, seeing announcements of these things that are a year or 2 years off just makes me not as excited for next gen as I want to be, because I don't like to see just carryovers from previous generations just being re-updated and reformatted for, you know, whatever is, you know, the new, I guess, hip generation is. I don't know if this is supposed to appeal to me as the people who grew up playing Gears of War, or if they're just trying to be like, forget all of y'all, we're trying to put a new audience back into this, so maybe that people that maybe had heard of Gears of War before would be like, oh, I've heard good things about that, I should try the new one. I'm not sure what again, we won't know nothing until they start a marketing approach and we see in action what they're trying to do with this. It is nice that they said this is a minimum two and a half years out. I'm glad that they're giving them a full development time for this so they can make it whatever they need to make it to be. But for me, in the meantime, when you have a game coming out this year, end of this year, like The Order 1886 from Santa Monica Studios, the guys who make the really cool God of War games on PSP, that to me is the next generation of third-person cover-based shooters, because I'm seeing the soul of Gears of War in that game. I can visualize what it might play like, and it gets me really excited, because even though it'll probably use the same skill set that I have developed playing Gears of War, it's applying something fresh where, like, I'm going to be amazed by, like, oh, you know, I'm not really sure what the enemies are in this game. You know, what am I fighting against? What kind of weapons am I using? Oh, it's like an 1800s alternate history steampunk Victorian thing. Interesting.
I like that mixture.
It really is. It's a really interesting game concept. That's why it caught my eye at E3 last year. Even though it was a purely CGI cutscene, I was like, wow, I really love games that just, like, think, what can we think up that would be a really cool game, and they try different things, and that's
anything that's steampunk to me. I think it's always fun.
We could use more steampunk, definitely. And you know, you got the Cyberpunk 2077 game coming out at some point, which, you know, we got our Cyberpunk, we got our steampunk. Like, it's awesome. Let's get more unique settings into games instead of just trying to make photorealistic recreations of places on Earth. Which is fine for some games, but the majority of things, that's not that interesting.
It's reaching a certain point, which is my one thing when you brought up kind of with Gears. You said a few seconds ago, I wanted you to continue on your rant, but you said, like, oh, it'll look better. And truthfully, at this point, not to say that graphics aren't a necessary element to any game, mm-hmm. but I feel like anything that comes out on the new consoles is going to look better.
But they're all going to be fighting over who's going to look the best, though. Like, I saw one.
For sure. Really, you know, obviously, they're still arguing resolution and frames per second and stuff. But at this point, you know, the defining characteristics for me, the defining things for a game, isn't going to be how it looks, even though I might mention, hey, that looks pretty or it looks good. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be, how does it play? What's the experience I'm getting from it? What is the combination of the game mechanics and the story and the, you know, elements that don't fit into just the visual characteristics, unless somebody does something, you know, unusual with visuals, which is possible. You never know. Somebody always does something crazy. But I guess, like, my thing with it, and again, touching off a bit of what you said earlier, for those of you that don't know, one of the rumors is that Black Tusk, a studio, is going to be handling Gears, and that they're on, you know, supposedly a 2 to 2.5 year development cycle for this new game, whatever it may be. Again, rumors. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But all of that being said, if some of you remember, at E3, at the Microsoft press conference, they actually showed a 30-second tech demo by Black Tusk that was kind of supposed to be showing off, you know, an in-game engine with the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, you brought it up. We kind of rewatched it before we recorded this. And yes, it does look like kind of a cliche, typical, you know, game, I guess, to an extent. But, you know, the fact was, is my understanding is it was a tech demo. I don't know if it was anything from what they were working on, but it's been, you know, 8-9 months, and studios don't just sit around and twiddle their thumbs. So they've been working on something for 8 or 9 months. And the rumor is now that whatever that was, assumingly a new IP, it's been put on the shelf for Gears. Again, assuming all these rumors are correct, which they could be totally wrong. But that being said, you know, we keep having this argument with Danny and some other people. Oh, Microsoft's investing so much in new IPs, this, that, and the other. It's like, oh, that's great. You know, he sent us a link to an article on another site that was talking about, oh, Microsoft is so, you know, they're all about new IPs. They know that's really important. And then in the same article is the information that says, oh, and by the way, you know, whatever Black Tusk was working on is being put to the side onto a shelf. It's probably going to disappear into that void where games that never get finished go. Mm-hmm. And they're working on Gears. And it was like,
I hope they,
I would much rather have a new IP than that.
Yeah, just, I mean, show more of, you know, other things. I don't know, like,
well, and the other thing is, like, there's very few franchises that aren't Nintendo that can successfully continue to put out games at a steady rate.
Yes.
That are sequels, because, like, obviously, you know, games like Final Fantasy, Metal Gear Solid, and maybe even to an extent, like Resident Evil. But the thing is a lot of those games are disconnected, even though they continue numbers, you know, Final Fantasy is going on 14. I think that's supposed to release later this year, you know, stuff like that. Not all of them are directly related.
No,
so,
nor do they all play similarly.
Yeah, so they're all, each game is a new experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the only, a few of them, you know, you do get characters that pop back up again, but again, they're spread out. It's not a direct sequel, you know, sort of thing. So I get the desire to continue with franchises that are making you money. But considering that they're entirely different genres, when you look at something like Gears and Halo versus Final Fantasy and Metal Gear Solid, I'm wondering if this is one of those big differences that shows the youth of Microsoft as a game developer, or as a, you know, handling games on hardware.
That makes sense.
Versus Sony, who has a few more years of...
Yeah, I mean, Sony has, you know, an extra generation lead on Xbox to begin with. So, you know, they've had some series, you know, like Metal Gear Solid and Final Fantasy, which have successfully jumped each platform with, you know, great success. Because, you know, I think by nature it is unfair to shooters in sequels, because the core concept of the game is so well established, and whatever the first of the series is, that most companies, but again, because making shooters, especially first person shooters, is the absolute safest bet you can make in video games, hands down. Like, if you want to make a quick buck, you make a shooting game, because that's majority of what people play these days. We'll spend money on that, because you really can't go wrong shooting a gun. Now, obviously, there's a lot of bad ones out there that we try to avoid, But I think there's only so many things that you can do initially to set your game apart that you're really not going to try to innovate too much in the sequel because you don't want to scare away your core audience. But at the same time, maybe that core audience is like, wow, this first game is great, but like, why don't y'all do something different with your talents instead of just making the same thing again? Like, good example, the first Dead Island that came out made by Techland Studios. I love, love, love that game, as broken as it was, because it was such a different experience for me, both single player and co-op. So by the time the sequel, Dead Island Riptide, came out, I was really, really excited to be like, oh, crap, they gave themselves, about 2 years to go back to the drawing board and you make a sequel to this great game. Surely it'll be amazing. It was actually a huge disappointment because they barely innovated at all. For the most part, most of like the glitches and bugs people had a problem with the first game were still present in the second one. So it was very disheartening to me. But now, on the same token, that same studio is turning around and making the game Dying Light on the next-gen platforms, which essentially is still the same theory of Dead Island, of being an open world single player survival horror game, but they're adding new different aspects, you do your scavenging in the daytime because it's real day night cycles, and the nighttime the monsters get much faster than you and can kill you, so you gotta run and hide. That's trying something different. That's not just being copy and pasting the same game mechanics into different locales. And that's what I'm really afraid of, especially with the new Gears and the new Halo, is that they're wasting both, people's time making these games and money on something that could be going into a new IP that could blow us all away. Because you got to remember, no one expected Halo to be as big as it was. No one expected Gears of War to be as big as it was, but that happened. That's great. Take that money that you made and try to, start a fire again.
Create the same experience. Yes. Or not experience, create that same feeling of building something new without it having to be that same franchise,
I guess. Make Xbox Live exciting again. Like, I have such good memories of the early days of Xbox Live, playing things like MechWarrior. Oh, I'm sorry, MechAssault 1 and 2 on there. Crimson Skies was amazing. Like, who even heard of an online multiplayer console dogfighting game before? That was insane. And you had so many different things that ran the gamut of Xbox Live experiences that still had a good population of people playing them, because there were so many different things you could segment into. Maybe you were just a sports gamer. So there were plenty of online sports games you could play back in the day on Xbox Live. Or you could, get more into shooting. And Halo 2 came out. It was a huge deal. There needs to be more offerings.
I feel like maybe part of the trouble...
Don't you feel like we have less options than we did last generation in terms of online games, in terms of the types of games we play? Because I feel like
there's not as much diversity because now that online has, had a few years to establish itself, or at least more than one generation to establish itself, I should say, companies know what makes money.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, they kind of have to weigh that decision between the creativity and the business. And I feel like maybe that's part of it, kind of, you brought up with formulas with shooters, is because at the end of the day, the bulk of shooters, we play them online. The stories, the single player campaigns are nice, but the bulk of them don't have the same staying power as the multiplayer. And that's where we're kind of reaching this stage of, what do you do? Because we don't feel like there's more story to create,
mm-hmm.
but we also don't feel like they can evolve the online multiplayer experience to make that worth our attention versus new IPs, regardless of whether they have, multiplayer or not. Because I know that one of the things I saw in the past week or so is something like Infamous Second Son isn't going to have multiplayer, and I was like, I'm cool with that, because I'm totally expecting the bulk of the game experience, the fun that I'm going to get out of it, to come from the single player campaign, and I feel like we're hitting this weird stage because, in earlier generations, things like first person shooters weren't necessarily the money-making games because everything was local. You had to LAN, you had to put four people on one system.
Yeah, that was the realm of PC, which is much easier to LAN back then.
Yeah, so, you know, it was those, and so the bulk of the money-making games were the ones that created these long, multiple-hour, single-player experiences, mm-hmm. you know, or they were like Smash Brothers. So, again, that, you know, person has to be there. And then you reach this weird stage now where the bulk of the money made is coming from either a dedicated single-player experience that's just a stunning, you know, game, mm-hmm. or in most cases, they make more money off of, you know, this multiplayer-based experience, the Call of Duties, the Halos, the Gears of War, the Battlefields. And I feel like that's causing us a little bit of issue because those certain types of games, like, eventually they get stale. You know, mm-hmm. eventually they can't go any further without you making something else. And if you're going to make something else, it can't be that franchise because then people are going to complain, oh, well, this isn't Halo. If you completely change all of the mechanics and, you know, the visuals and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we're kind of at this stage where we're going to have to see where the creativity with it goes. Yeah. Because even to that extent, like, we've seen games that did very well as, you know, stunning single player experiences, like, say, Tomb Raider, but then hear people say, well, the game failed because it didn't sell like Call of Duty.
Which is stupid.
It is, because first off,
you're
it's two totally
win
different
when you
things.
Compare it to Call of Duty. Like, you, no average game is going to make $10-12 million in sales. Like, we just, that's impossible. There's too many options out there, let alone all the free games people play, both on their computer, on their phone, and on their tablet. So if you're dropping $60 on a game, you want to make damn sure it's worth your time and money. And I think, I don't know if it's a changing market in terms of just less and less people are buying games. Maybe more people are going to Steam at this point. I thought about it myself that the entry level cost wasn't so high, but
I
consoles still serve a purpose, and there's still a lot of people that choose to play on them. And I don't want it to be like the consoles are kind of getting the crappy end of the stick because they're getting all the safe games. Well, I'm looking at the PC, and they have all these insanely original puzzle,
don't
adventure,
starve.
Horror, action,
don't starve.
Everything. Yeah, Don't Starve is a really cool game. I suck at it. But, like, all these really interesting games, I'm like, wow, I would love to be able to play that. Oh, wait, no, my hardware's crap. I can't run any of that stuff. But it looks really cool. So then I'm looking on PlayStation 4 being like, now, why can't you have all of this cool stuff? Like, why can't developers take the time to start porting these games to PS4 or Xbox One? Like, you know, I really do think whichever company, Sony or Microsoft, gets that connection with Steam or gets that connection with GOG or something, some kind of streaming service, they need to offer more incentive to have these people say, I want to spend that extra maybe month or two development time to port my system, to port my game from PC to the PS4 or Xbox One. I think that's where you start to see a lot more money. Because if you have people that are like, man, I know eventually I'll build my own PC, but they keep putting it off. If you tell them, hey, dude, if you just spend $400 or $500 on next-gen console, we will guarantee you there'll be a steady stream of these games coming to your platform. Because I know they're not going to take these insane risks on these platforms. But I don't know why not. Because if we're really going to push digital distribution as the next thing, you know, if they really are making a $400 Xbox One with no disc drive attached to it, that could be a good thing if they back it up with a really, really diverse set of games available to download at really diverse price points. You know, as again, we just talked about it on the show, but just it is unacceptable to spend $59.99 on a downloadable game. Because I did not have to pay people to package that, to make that game, to ship it, to do PR for it. I saw it to download. It looked interesting. I bought it. I should get some kind of discount or be rewarded. Or there needs to be more effort put into it. Because, like, I it's not fun to me to get in my car and go to GameStop or Best Buy and me looking like, man, look at all of these games that came out 6 months ago and they're still $60 just sitting here. Because these companies don't know how to be competitive for their prices. And then on the PC side of things, they have just gone bananas with their sales.
Pre-order discounts and
discounts.
Rewards for
yeah,
pre-orders.
Buy this one game, get the last game this company made for free. Just this insane stuff that makes you be like, well, why the hell did I buy this PS4 for? Like,
well, and that's kind of the hard point I'm at right now, is that the bulk of what I'm playing on the systems I have, you know, on the 360 and the PS3, because I really am not playing the Xbox One right now.
Yeah.
Is I'm playing all those games that I've built up, you know, like that I never finish and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of those backlog titles. And then a lot of the new stuff that I get now, I get on PC because it is a better deal. You know, I'm not getting an incentive right at this exact moment to go and spend money on my consoles, regardless of which of them it is.
Yep.
You know, all of them in a whole, when I know that I can get usually a better deal, or like those pre-order bonuses, or, you know, it's something that'd be really interesting to see if they ever did it with like the digital distribution on the consoles, the way that, you know, there's multiple stages of like pre-order rewards. Oh, if we get to this many pre-orders, we'll give you this. And then if we get to that many, you'll get this too. And then if you get to this many, you can have this soundtrack, and you can have, so there's just so many things that are coming out of it that it's like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the consoles try to combat all of these demands for, you know, the PC, the Steam stuff.
Yeah. I think the easiest thing is, you know, and I know they could patch this in, but give us full keyboard and mouse support on both systems, and then leave it up to these developers to be like, look, we have mouse and keyboard support now. Our hardware can more than run anything you guys are making right now. We planned ahead for that. Or we can optimize it. And that's the great thing about consoles. They can optimize the crap out of things. But if you have if you don't have to adjust to the controller, because I'm sure that's like 99% of their excuses, like, oh, our game would work on a controller, it's too fast-paced, or it's too many buttons. I'm like, we're bullcrap. I have a keyboard, I have a mouse in my lap, they're connected to my PS4. Give me these experiences. Because I think they're losing out on so much money to the because you got to think, I mean, it is a rare breed of people that will spend $1,000 to $2,000 building a badass computer, and then they turn around and they play little indie games, essentially. They play all the coolest little stuff that comes out, you know, little $5, $10, $15 games here and there. They're not even playing the AAA, you know, 4,000 resolution blockbusters that they built the thing for. They're so involved with all the cool little things that are already available for either really cheap or for free. So if that's your competition, you need to make sure that as many games as possible are available either to stream or to download onto these next-gen platforms. Because I think that's the only way you're going to be able to compete with Steam. Because I really do think Steam is becoming a bigger and bigger deal as time goes on, as more people see the value in, if I just save up maybe a month or two paycheck, I can build my own computer instead of spending that half a G on the console for the safe bet. But now with the computer, I can optimize it, I can upgrade it, and I have a whole bunch of really cheap games to play. A lot of free ones, woo-hoo, too.
And there's sales.
And there's sales constantly. Like, you don't get
sales. Well, there's always sales. And the fun thing with, like, Steam is if you put it on your wish list, and this is hit and miss. It depends. It's a lot harder during the sales. But if you put something on your wish list, so you have a wish list of games, like, I want these 10 games. You can have as many as you want. Every time a game goes on sale, they email you. And they say, a game on your wish list is on sale. And so they get you because they list it right there. They show you what the sale price is. You know, it's, you know, Kingdoms of Amalur or whatever that RPG was, you know, is currently on sale for $6 instead of $20. I'm looking at it going like, I want you. I'll buy you and I probably won't play you for a year, but I want you, you know. And it's that quick and easy, you know, just click and go and get it sort of thing.
Wouldn't you want to have that on consoles? Like, wouldn't, I can't believe Sony and Microsoft aren't like,
well, maybe not the email part, but,
well, not the email part, you know, just like being able to be like, look, that game is literally $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, $10. That is so stupidly cheap, but it's only on this sale for 3 days. You might not have any flippant interest at all in this game, but you're probably going to spend that trivial amount of money on it on the off chance that one day you get bored enough or you start playing and you're like, well, holy crap, turns out I like this, or holy crap, I don't like this, but I only spent $5, so I'm not really pissed about it. Instead of the situations where these people go out and buy $60 games at launch, play them, and then either hate them and be like, I want my money back. What do you mean you only give me $20 of my $60 back? Duh, dude. What did you think would happen? Or it's like, oh, no, it's cool. I already beat this. I'm going to trade this in, get, you know, a fourth of my money back, and put that towards another game coming out. Like, that is just bad finances. I'm sorry. Like, I get how these companies exist at the stupidity of other people, but at the end of the day, you got to realize, your video game is worth so much more to you either to keep it or to sell it yourself to someone else that it just doesn't make sense anymore that we still have the concept of trading in games we finish playing. Do your research. Buy only the things that you know you want to keep at 60. Otherwise, just wait till it gets cheaper. Or
which really nowadays most of the time only takes a couple months unless it's Call of Duty. Yeah. Like, except for specific titles like, you know, the Call of Duties and the Battlefields and stuff, half of these games go down in price to like $40 or $30 within, you know, 1 to 3 months. Oh, so yeah.
Or you could get lucky and it'll end up as a free game on the PS Plus. Like, ridiculous. Like how you can have games that are less than a year old and they're like, you know what? You can have this for free now. I'm like, well, enjoy. Crap, thank you. I wish I had already played it on Xbox a year ago because I'm so, you know, into games. But thank you. This is a really nice thought. You know, if I was a casual gamer, God forbid, and I just had a PS3 and I had, you know, I think I have like almost 30 free PS3 games now. And I've had this thing less than a year. And I'm just amazed at just the value that this offers for something that I have to pay for anyways to play on a PS4 online. That's a good idea, because that's just like, it's so hard for me to put this into words, but Xbox needs to understand that. Games for Gold needs to get on the ball. I don't know. They need to focus on something, and I guess it'll have to be a total UI update, because I know everyone hates Windows 8. Mandy, what has your been experience with the Xbox One's interface? Have you had problems with it? Is it a bunch of ads like 360? Is it as bad as it seems?
Here's the thing, and it's not as bad as the 360, I don't think, but keep in mind that I personally only use my console for games, so anything that is not game-related, I consider an ad. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of ads, there is. And then there's a couple of things that they consider content where they talk about stuff. Like, they're showing you things that are going on you can get through the console, mm-hmm. like, one way or another. Yeah. But when it's something that's, like, about TV or movie or, like, hey, whatever NFL crap they have or whatever that is, you know, mm-hmm. I don't use it for that. So, to me, those are ads. You know, if you can take information from my console and use it, you know, through your cookies and tracking and all of that good stuff, which I probably just termed that wrong, but whatever. If you can use all of that to help you craft your campaigns, why can't you make it so that I only get gaming stuff on my dashboard? So I don't know. Like, the interface isn't horrible, but there's a lot of times where we play this game, and you can see it sometimes in the chat, where we're like, how do I get to this? Or how do I do that? And then it's this funny, you know, I guess like a comedic interlude of everybody in the team talking about, well, how do we do that? How do we get to this setting? How do you go in and do this? You know, I got a code for something and I couldn't figure out how to find the redeem code. You know, I'm like jumping through everything going like, where the hell do I have to go to redeem this code to get whatever it was? And so I finally found it. Like, I have to go into my games and apps, and then I have to go into the store, and then I have to go do this. And all I'm thinking is, man, you know, on Xbox 360, I just clicked the guide button. It popped up and two stops over put you into the redeem code thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So the interface to an extent isn't bad, but there's a lot of intricacies to it. That part of it is learning it, and part of it is just I feel like certain things, like say redeeming a code, getting to certain settings, should be really easy to do, because that's something you might expect somebody to do often and they don't want to struggle with it, you know. Or and streamlining their stuff, this is really stupid, but the Final Fantasy 13 Lightning Returns demo came out like last week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they changed everything now so that their entire system is streamlined in terms of you using money instead of Microsoft points means that they won't let you quote unquote buy stuff unless you have a credit card on your account.
Oh, that's wrong.
So I can't go, like, I cannot go onto Xbox.com, go to a demo and click download to my console and have it, you know, go into that queue. That way, the next time I turn it on, it downloads. because to go through that process where like you click it and say, yes, I want it. And it tells you demo free for gold, because in that box where you say, yes, I want this, and it goes into your queue, it's telling me I cannot do this. I am not allowed to progress this menu, this option, because I don't have credit card info on file. And I'm like, it's a free game demo. So, you know what I did? I said, screw it. I'll just download it on my PS3, you know? And yeah. So I feel like there's certain parts of that.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's kind of like they've, and I know that that's 360, not Xbox One, but they're trying to streamline it so that everything that works around your, with, you know, Xbox.com segues well into either the 360 or the One. So it was one of those things where I'm like, am I going to have this same trouble with my Xbox One? You know, if I can go in and set something to queue on the Xbox One, is it going to again tell me I can't do it if I don't have information on file, even if what I'm getting is free? And things like that. So you're right. There's certain things they're going to kind of have to do. And I'm not sure, you know, there's rumors that they're going to have their dashboard update, including for the Xbox One in March, you know, their usual spring update. So I'm not quite sure what they're going to do with that, since there's obviously a lot of things they want to work on with the user interface on the One.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate it, but I admit that if I can avoid, like, I've pinned everything I possibly can. That way I don't have to go away from like the home screen unless I absolutely have to on the Xbox One.
You know, something's wrong when you're afraid to navigate your own UI. But I agree. I mean, there's parts of the PS4's UI that I can't stand. Like the fact that I can't move around tiles, I can't delete things I don't want to be there. It's very frustrating. I can't even change the color of the background. So, I mean, yay next gen, but also, where's my customizability? Like, honestly, like I feel like I'm losing that. As we go forward, it's more like uniform, streamlined. Everybody's going to use the same thing, so no one gets confused. I'm like, I don't want that. I kind of like having a bit of variation between consoles. You know, if I have an Xbox and my friend has an Xbox, you know, it's, wouldn't it be nice if we could somehow tell the difference when they're plugged in, other than just, you know,
who signs in first?
Who signs in first? Like, it's just, it's
my Kinect silly. Half the time doesn't recognize me. I have to sign myself in.
All that, like. I shouldn't have to, like, when I think about when I want to play a video game, I shouldn't have to think about all this other crap that I have to go through to find what I want to play. It's like when you're on Netflix and you don't know what you want to watch. You're going to have a bad time just sifting through all the stuff on Netflix. It's like, damn, I just kind of want to find what I'm in the mood for watching, essentially. And I just kind of feel like I have that for games now, where there's just so many games out there. But there's so many usually hoops I have to jump through to start playing just a game that it makes me less inclined to be more, you know, I don't know what you say. It makes me less inclined to be more random with my game playing. Like, I more have to schedule it now to be like, okay, I got to wait for this.
You're less likely to be spontaneous.
Yeah, I'm less likely to be spontaneous. It's just, there's too much thought that has to go into this now, which is, you know, at some part, you know, I guess that's fun, but for most people, you don't want to have to, like, worry about what your console is doing or what you have to navigate, or, you know, making sure your kid doesn't accidentally press the wrong combination of buttons on the Xbox's dashboard and you buy $100 worth of Xbox Live or something. Just, there's so much crap there. I hate how, I don't know, I guess really that's another appeal of being a PC gamer. Is even, you got your desktop.
Customization. You can do whatever you want. It's your PC.
It's your computer. You know, you want Linux? Do your Linux. You want to do Mac and, you know, boot camp Windows? Go for it. You know, whatever makes you happy. What about the consoles? It's just like, I don't know, man. It's like kind of like living in communist China. It's just like, here's your
okay.
console.
Okay, I wouldn't
console,
stop
here's
on
your
that.
Console. And they're all the freaking same. What?
I wouldn't stop right. with that, because that's how I want this show.
Okay, that's fine. We've gone completely off topic from Gears of War, but that's all right.
Yeah, so we obviously start. This is how conversations between the two of us usually go.
Yes.
So we're going to close off this overtime. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know it's a bit long. I apologize for that. We did kind of tangent off into a totally different direction. Mm-hmm. But as usual, all of the other stuff that Danny usually handles, I guess, you know, you can leave us a review, I think, through the app. Or at least I hope you do. You can email us fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Tell us what you think. Do you agree with any of the stuff we said, you know, way back there with Gears and Black Tusk and all of that, or whatever we've just talked about a bit? You know, all of that good stuff, or leave a comment on the site, because I think this should probably go up there too. Yep. But so we're going to close it up. We're going to stop with that. We've been all over the place, but it's been fun.
It has.
So this was another episode of GTR Overtime, and we will see you.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.